Body, Mind, Spirit Radio, your life connection to the information for a healthy body, an enlightened mind, and a renewed spirit.
Good afternoon, everybody. Today is August 3rd, 2015, and you're listening live with Body, Mind, Spirit Radio, and today's show, In Touch Interviews. Today, I would like to welcome a brand new guest, as well as a returning guest. Dr. Rajan Narayanan is the co-founder of Life in Yoga, and Susanna Ran returns, and she is the founder of Yoga Therapy Om. Both are joining the show today to discuss the upcoming measured yoga therapy training. So without further ado, I would like to welcome both Rajan and Susanna to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Courtney.
Thank you so much for joining me today. It is a pleasure to be able to talk to you again, Susanna, and definitely get to know you as well, Rajan. I know both of you guys are very excited to talk about the upcoming measured yoga therapy training. So would you guys like to explain what that is?
Rajan?
Sure. Yes. Measured yoga therapy is a concept or a process whereby you can actually tell what would be the effect of a particular yoga exercise on your psychophysiological makeup. And it is particularly used as a remedial approach for any kind of abnormal disease condition. So, for instance, if somebody had a chronic headache problem, what we would do is we would try different yoga techniques to see what is happening. But what we'll be able to have is we have a tool whereby we can actually measure what was the impact of that specific yoga exercise immediately upon finishing the exercise, and thereby predict if you keep doing this exercise, what will be the impact of it of a few days down the road. Normally in yoga practice, you're told that unless you keep practicing and you do it regularly, you won't find the benefits of yoga. But then there is no objective measurement tool to say you are guaranteed this kind of a benefit or that kind. And here we have the tool where in one session we can instantly tell you whether you'll benefit in a certain way or not.
That sounds awesome. Now, you talked about a tool to be able to measure this. So what exactly is the tool and how does it work?
Okay. The tool is called electrophotonic imaging. And this tool has its roots and understanding in traditional medicine systems, particularly the Chinese traditional medicine on which it was developed, as well as it relates to the Ayurvedic medicine, the Indian traditional medicine. In all these medicine systems, traditional medicine systems, what they do is a traditional practitioner would actually feel at the wrist, near the wrist, they will feel the forearm, and they will sense for what are the vibrations, sensations that are happening. Typically, the word that has been used, typically they call it as pulse reading, but it's not really reading the pulse of the heart, it's something else. So they read this, and they assess what is the underlying condition of the body based upon this vibration. Now, in the Chinese system, these vibrations are the underlying movement within the meridians of the body. And, you know, most people are familiar these days with the concept of the biomeridians coming from the Chinese meridian system used in acupuncture. And these vibrations or movements are going in all parts of the body, and they manifest in the fingers of the hands too. So if there is vibration going on inside, then as we all know that, you know, all of any kind of energy movement is they are all transformation of energy. And so these wonderful Russian scientists going back some more than 30 years back, they developed the idea that if you put your finger within an electromagnetic field, which means you put a circular magnet about, you know, behind your finger, and you put your finger right in between the magnet, and just as the electromagnet fires with a little bit of electricity going into it, from the back you take a photograph of your fingertip, And this creates the, this gives an aura kind of image. And that image is really a reflection of the vibrations that are going inside your meridian. And this image that is captured, which they call it as electrophotonic imaging, they parse it out with a statistical algorithm to analyze your psychophysiological makeup. In other words, it'll give you in 9 major organ system areas, and each of them is divided into many, many subdivisions. So probably like somewhere like 40 divisions, each of your hormones, or you know, each part of your body, everything, what kind of communication activity is going on in there. This is what is measured through electrophotonic imaging. Now, this measurement is measurement of your innate vibrations, and the innate vibrations are not necessarily what you observe in a physiological sense. Because if a person is to experience something physiologically, that takes a period of time to set within the body. Like the pancreas is going to weaken and a person is going to become diabetic, it happens over a period of time. But when the communications in the body are happening, that is saying the pancreas is not receiving enough communication information, even before the pancreas starts becoming diabetic, you'll read it over here. Now, another instance, for instance, it is well known that under stressful situation, the sugar level in the body spikes and the pancreas is unable to take the load. Even in that case, so you're momentarily in a highly stressful situation and your pancreas will read like you're a diabetic when you actually are not. So what you're reading in the communication system is as it is happening instantly. So what happens is for us, we take a reading, we find a chronic patient of something. An example is headache, and we read their electrophotonic image of their 10 fingers one at a time, and what we find, let's say, which we find the nervous system is slightly weak. So what we realize from there is we need to strengthen the central nervous system. We will do one exercise to strengthen that. And immediately after, we'll have them put their finger in again into the electromagnetic field, and we'll read again, and we'll find the nervous system will be back to normal. And this what is instant validation of whether it is working or not. Now, let's say that that was not the root cause of the headache. We have seen cases where the root cause of the headache may be weakness in the system, weakness in the heart, or it could be weakness in the digestive system, in which case doing an exercise that strengthens the nervous system is not going to do anything. In fact, in the case where the person had a weak heart, which was the cause of the headache, according to this reading, any exercise dealing with strengthening the nervous system was actually weakening the whole body. Whereas on the other hand, when we gave them a meditative exercise, immediately the heart strengthened, and after they did this for 10 days, this person's headache went away permanently. So this is the idea that this measured yoga therapy, for people who have any kind of ailment, we would measure them, and we would test what is the right remedial yoga practice to do and tell them to do it, and we can immediately measure whether it's working or not.
Awesome. Now, I know that there's many people out there listening to this show, and I'm sure that some people are having the question right now, is this scientifically validated, or is there science behind this that validates this?
Yes. Actually, what it is, in anything that is done new, every dot in the scientific scheme of things may not be complete, but a lot of it is scientifically validated. So what has been validated scientifically? Well, the first thing is there is complete validation between the Chinese traditional medicine concepts and the electrophotonic imaging to work with that. It was on that basis it was developed. Now, aside from that theoretical mapping over there, this has been developed over 30 years by the Russian health system. And apparently this is used as part of the health system in Russia. And over these 30 years, they have taken thousands of people, people who are in good health and people who are in compromised health, and they have read their auras, and that is how they have developed this algorithm. Now, the inventor of this, who comes from St. Petersburg in Russia and is a professor over there, this person, he claims that for different types of ailment, the predictive correlation is between 80 to 92%. Okay, so in any kind of tool, to be able to get correct prediction of 80 to 92%, given the kind of lab results and things that people have been using, getting 80 to 92% is a pretty good tool. Now, aside from this, when we look in terms of, we are using it, of course, for yoga. When we use it for yoga, today there is an understanding, and this has been scientifically validated, that when a person does a yoga session and goes for the deep relaxation, immediately some aspects of the genetic expression of the person changes. Now, for this, we need to understand what is genetic expression, and many people in the audience may not know that. What happens is, but the building blocks of the biochemistry of the body are the hormones, and the building blocks of all the hormones are the genes in our body. And within the genes, the way in which the hormones are formed is through the copying process of the DNA. And in the copying process of the DNA, what it copies into is called the RNA. The DNA to RNA process of copying is called gene transcription. Now, originally it used to be thought, when I say originally, going back 30 years, it used to be thought that the RNA is an exact duplicate of the DNA. And that was when the Human Genome Project went into, when it was done, the initial thinking was, once you decode the DNA, you can actually predict what is going to happen to a person, the health and the lifelong, this thing, all of that. And then lo and behold, after they did that, they found the RNA was invariably never an exact copy of the DNA. And why was it not an exact copy? What happened from a scientific perspective, they will say, there are two elements that causes the a difference in the RNA copy. One element they call as histone modification, and the other they call as methylization of the genes. I'll explain briefly what they mean. Most people have seen the double helix of the DNA. That is a big strand. And that strand is wound around a little, very tiny, minute little finger kind of thing around which they swirl around. That little minute little finger is called the histone. Now, what happens is, under stressful circumstances, the histone becomes tight and fat. When it becomes tight and fat, the copying of the DNA into the RNA is affected. And that is what is the histone modification that changes the RNA. The second one is the methylization of the genes. What is methylization of the genes? This double helix which has, many, many little buckets of the four types of acid, A, T, C, and G. Now, some of them over there will develop a little coating over them, like a little veneer. And that veneer coating over there prevents the direct copy of that particular part of the DNA into the RNA. And this is called methylization of the genes. And so it is very well known that yoga is one of the factors in the deep relaxation actually changes the copying process, the gene transcription, which is what is the genetic expression. So what is well known is the inflammatory factors in the body, and those who understand from a medical standpoint, inflammation in the body, in any part of the body, happens when there is some kind of a disturbance in the body, and inflammation is the sign that there is abnormality. And when inflammation goes away, the body is healed. So the inflammatory factors all get suppressed and in the genetic expression. And this is something which is already known. And there is, based upon this and more work that is going on, they're able to find yoga is able to suppress the bad genes and open up the good genes. This is what is happening in the gene transcription process. So, so we have a hypothesis called the unified system of medicine. And this hypothesis is a combination of what has been observed in the genetic expression and how yoga affects a person physiologically. And on the other side, the mapping of the Chinese medical, Chinese traditional Chinese medicine and the electrophotonic imaging, where we bring both of these concepts together, and in between lies the concept of unified system of medicine, which will be an underlying concept of this measured yoga therapy. And what exactly is this? The idea is the body's regulatory system lies within these meridians of the body. The meridians are like the sensors and the circuitry of our entire intelligence. This is what comes from traditional Chinese medicine as well as from the traditional Indian medicine of Ayurveda. They say the secret of your body's programming lies within your meridian, or in the yoga process we call it as nadis. It lies in your nadis. And this nadi takes input from four sources, and it throws the output through the genetic expression, the gene transcription. So what are the four sources of input? One source of input, all of us know, anything that goes in through our mouth or is injected into our body, whether it is food, biochemicals, drugs, whatever that may be going in, all of them is one. The second element that goes in there is the power of your own mind. It is well known in the medicine field that when we are doing drug testing, anybody whose mind is positively disposed, that person will heal faster and will heal. And sometimes even when they give a sugar pill, they heal thinking that they are getting the medication. This power of the mind, what they call a placebo effect, the power of the mind can also heal people. And it's the really affirmation that you're healing. The third element is when there is a direct contact into this meridian system or nadis. And acupuncture is an example of that. They poke a needle right in there, and they impact the meridian system or the nadis. The fourth source is what we call as a wireless communication into the nadis or the meridian. And what is this? This is the role of Reiki healing. This is the role of traditionally what used to be called blessings, the power of prayer or divine healing and all of that. All of that comes to this. All these input goes into the nadis of the meridians, and the output comes to the genetic expression, the gene transcription, and that is how the healing takes place in the body. Now, this electrophotonic imaging can measure all of these things. The moment your mind changes, the electrophotonic imaging, the reading changes. The moment I've seen people where they will come in and take the reading, they are feeling very thirsty, but they take the reading, and you'll find some aspects of their system are looking weak. You tell them, go take a drink of water and come back, and you take the reading, and immediately everything has become normalized. So this kind of phenomenon is measurable through the electrophotonic imaging. Of course, what will be needed is we need many more large volume testing to be categorized as something that is absolutely and scientifically validated. And there are many more points that need to be connected. But there is a scientific basis to it, although every part of the science may not be adequately proved to the degree that is required for absolute scientific validation. So that is where this technology and this process is.
Now, do you feel, excuse me, in the future that this tool could actually predict future diseases or conditions in the human body?
I just want to interject one thing, and then you can continue. I had a client come in, and I did a reading, and he had low pancreas energy. And it turns out his father had pancreatic cancer. So he was very concerned about that. So I knew a specific yoga posture to do, and we did it, and it cleared it. So, yes, I do believe that had he not known that and just carried on with his regular yoga classes, it would have continued and bypassed or missed that low pancreas energy, and he may down the road have gotten pancreatic cancer. But I'll give Rajan the floor now.
Yes. What you noticed, Susanna, is a very good example of the kind of things that it could be used for. However, what we need to be very sensitive is the readings of a person on the electrophotonic imaging can change based upon a change in their own thinking pattern. So our mind is such, in the next moment, we can think of something that is worrisome, and immediately those stress factors will impact the reading. Next moment, you're thinking of a beautiful experience, and immediately all your happy factors will change the reading of the electrophotonic imaging. So when we read something in electrophotonic imaging, we need to be very careful in understanding whether this is a momentary phenomenon or is this a truly, fully predictive phenomenon. When we know that a certain pattern of communication that is happening in the nadis is being perpetuated all the time, then in which case it would be predictive of what will come in the future. But if it is not continuously perpetuating in the system and it was only a momentary blip because of something that was there in the mind or some before you took the reading you had some inappropriate food or something like that, then in which case you cannot conclude it is predicting the future disease that would be coming in. So we need to be very, very careful, and the way to do it will be that you, if a person is concerned, to take repeated readings over a period of time and then to see whether the same pattern is emanating. Then in which case you can be fairly certain. But of course, even before you go over there, if you can apply various other factors like what Susanna did, applied a few yoga techniques to get the person to reverse that the weakness in the pancreas that was being shown over there, that is even better. But going that route, you can never prove or disprove that this was something that was going to happen. But you took care of it, and your interest was the health of the patient, so you didn't wait to go and establish whether it was whether it is something that is predictive or not. So that would be the way in which. So we need to be careful in saying that this is predictive of what will come later.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that there is a lot of listeners out there that are very intrigued by what you guys are saying. But I also know that there's a lot of listeners out there that truly just don't understand yoga. And I feel like I'm talking to two people who really know the subject in and out. And I'm going to back and ask either one of you guys to kind of explain what is yoga. You know, what is yoga supposed to be for somebody out there who's listening, who's very intrigued, but they have absolutely no understanding of what yoga actually is.
This is a question both of us should answer. Susanna, can you speak first, and then both of us may give a different flavor and perspective. Go ahead.
Right. Okay. I'll go with my experience. When I came into yoga, I came in from the physical because I was a physical person. I was an athlete, and I was in the fitness world, so I looked upon yoga as yoga postures. And then down the road, what happened was what I was doing was not good for me, and I ended up injuring myself or basically bringing injuries up to the surface that had been there. And I found that what I was doing, what I was considering yoga, was not really yoga, because yoga is ultimately about mastering the mind. And through the mastery of the mind, you are able to heal the body. And that's the route I took. So using meditation to master the mind, and practicing postures that are calming and steadying is what yoga is, and anybody can do it. I have many, many, many students over the age of 75 that came in very tight and very imbalanced, and over slow, steady progress, breathing and with awareness through the postures that are very subtle movement, not big movement, subtle makes the biggest changes. And Rajan can speak to that after. And what I've noticed is that people, I've got a lot of people, like I said, that are in their 70s and even 80s that are getting that marvelous results because of they're bringing their minds inward. The mind goes either out or in. When you yoke the mind, that's what yoga is. And even if someone says they can't do fancy postures, you don't have to. You can sit. Sitting in meditation leads to yoga. And from there, I'm going to let Rajan take that.
Okay. Thank you, Susanna. That is a very good description of how you can see how yoga is touching various different places. However, I'm going to go into the textbook. When I say the textbook, Yoga Sutras of Patanjali is the textbook of yoga, the original textbook. So here, as per the textbook, there are 8 aspects of yoga. And within the 8 aspects of yoga, there are 5 of those correspond to 5 types of exercises that impact a different functionality of the system. I'll touch on all of them. In order to be able to be effective with yoga, the first thing is each person needs to live true to their conscience. If you're living a life where you cannot be true to your conscience, just violation of your conscience can mess up your mind-body connection and you will become unhealthy. And so that is the first requirement. The second of the 8 is that you need to be a person of regular habits. And this means working with your circadian rhythm. But each of us, our body's mechanisms kicks up in a certain way based upon how our routine goes for the day. So when we wake up in the morning, how the body kicks up and how the days go goes by, when you have the lows in the day or highs in the day, and when you go to sleep. So you need to keep a fairly regular routine in order for the body to live a body-mind connection, to have predictability so that it can keep you in good health. Now, these 2 are in your personal domain, but once you have dealt with them, then there are 5 areas of yoga exercises. The first is the physical alignment, which comes from the postures and everything physical people generally think in terms of as yoga. The second one is the breathing practices, which controls the vitality in the body. The third is the vibration elements. When we say vibration elements, this includes the food you eat, the drugs you consume. All of these are vibrational elements. It also includes the music you hear. It also includes the company you keep, which kind of people are hanging around you and the place you are in. All of them, give you vibrations. And then the 4th element is when you're able to completely shut out your mind. And how do you shut out your mind? Not by effort, by effortlessness. In other words, you mentally go into a zone where you visualize something and you keep your mind as one point focused over there. And over a period of time, perhaps the mind out of boredom shuts off. And this is how, this is the beginning point of what is called the mindfulness technique of meditation. And from there, when the mind is shut off, and when you're able to connect into the higher level of the cosmic intellect, that is called transcendental aspect of the meditation, which leads to the cosmic connection, which is the source of intuition for people who have that openness. Now, the interesting part is the 5 areas of exercises that I pointed out over here. So in any yoga exercise, there is one requirement. That one requirement is you should be completely inward focused in that exercise. Let's say you're doing a posture in yoga. You cannot do a posture in yoga while doing it. You have the TV or the radio on, listening to the news and doing yoga. There is no yoga in that exercise. You need to be inward focused and you're feeling the sensations in each part of your body as you're doing that particular posture, and you keep the awareness within, then that physical posture becomes a yoga exercise. So with that said, the 5 areas of yoga exercises have unique impact on 5 areas of the psychophysiological system. The physical elements of it impact the musculoskeletal system. The breathing element of it affects the vitality of the whole system, and without vitality, nothing else functions. And then the third one affects the vibrations of the system. And in yoga exercises, what do? We don't consume food, or we don't have other people. That is not the kind of vibration we look for, and there is generally music is general soothing music. But then there are different specific chakra vibration sounds that can be invoked for specific purpose to overcome weaknesses in certain places. This vibration and this element of this yoga practices is generally not well known. Most of yoga will say physical elements, the breathing elements, and meditation. And that meditation is a loose word, whereas the vibration element is very important. And there is a book by the South African gentleman settled in New York by the name of Alan Finger called Chakra Meditation, where he goes into depth about the vibration aspect. Now, this is something without the vibration aspect, yoga is only working at a very partial level. In fact, the physical and the breathing physical aspect of yoga is less than 10% of the effectiveness of yoga. The breathing aspect perhaps a little bit more than that, but then the bulk, the lion's share of the impact of yoga is in the zone of the vibration, the quietening of the mind, the meditation, and the connective aspect, the power of your affirmation. This is where the bigger impact of yoga lies. So this is generally not well known, and so when we, from our Life in Yoga Institute approach, talk of yoga, we talk about all these areas, and because most of the world does not appreciate the vibration aspect, the quietening of the mind aspect, and the affirmation aspect, we tend to focus more on that one to the degree that a person is receptive to it. And so that gives you a picture of what yoga is all about. It's much, much more than the physical element, and the non-physical elements are really where 90% of the impact of yoga lies.
Now, we have a caller who has a question, and I'm sure that you guys can answer this. How do you guys know what type of posture, meditation, vibration to prescribe to a specific person? For example, if somebody has diabetes, how would you know how to prescribe something specific for them as opposed to somebody who just has chronic pain? How do you guys find different, different areas to work on?
Yes. The key part is, I'm going to give you an example of the same exercise that was used for a person with diabetes and for a person with a chronic pain situation, and it worked for both of them, okay? And this was a diabetic person when the person came, and when we did the reading, we found the pancreas was weak. So what we did is, there is a particular breathing exercise in yoga called Kapalabhati. And this is often described as forced abdominal exhalation. I really don't like that word, forced abdominal exhalation, because in yoga, everything has to be done without stress in the system. The concept of a force seems to be like something that induces stress. But a better way of putting this is, we should call it as diaphragmatic breathing. So you lift up the diaphragm as you exhale. And so this exercise, when you lift up the diaphragm, the entire digestive cavity is squeezed. And when you release, it is relaxed. And you do this in a peaceful, relaxed way. It's massaging the entire abdominal digestive organs. And that massaging massages the pancreas, and after 15 minutes, when we do the reading again, we can immediately see the weakness in the pancreas has gone. Now, I'm going to give you another example. There is another person who came, and this person, when we took the reading, we found that this person came with a chronic headache problem, where this lady used to get headache arbitrarily, like every second day or every third day, and she would get, but once it comes, it stays for 3 or 4 hours. And during her menstrual cycle, just before the starting of the menstrual cycle, it will be very severe, and through that cycle, she will have this kind of a pain. And when we read her, what we actually found was her liver and her pancreas were the one which was weak. The pancreas was very slightly weak, but the liver was the one which was badly, significantly weak. So what we did was, we had her do the same exercise that we did for the diabetic, that is the forced diaphragmatic breathing. And after 15 minutes, we could immediately see that stabilized. And then we told her, you keep doing this, and twice a day. She kept doing it, and after 10 days, she came back, and she said she never had an instance of headache, and we took the reading, and even without doing anything, all her organ systems had come back to normal. So the message over here is, without being able to measure and without being able to understand what the condition is, to be able to say you're going to pass out this for that or this exercise for this or whatever doesn't work, because we use the same exercise for one person who had a headache situation and another person who had a diabetic situation. We used exactly the same exercise to get the relief. So this is why anybody who thinks in terms of yoga therapy as something like a can system, if you have this, do this. If you have that, do that. Well, what you will find is there could be a high degree of correlation, okay? So if anybody who is diabetic, you tell them do this exercise, you'll probably find a majority of the diabetic people will get benefit from that exercise, okay? And similarly, but there are other categories of exercises you would do for various purposes. Another example is an example of exercise that is used for thyroid condition, for sleep apnea, and it can also be used for a weaker nervous system. And this particular exercise is called Ujjayi Pranayama. And when you read the finger of the person and understand what is the underlying dimension, that's when you know what exercise to use. So the concept of one exercise for one particular problem may be approximately correct, but that may not always be the case.
Well, thank you so much for answering that. And I'd like to go back to the measured yoga therapy. I know that you guys have an upcoming training program. Would you like to talk a little bit about that and what that entails?
Susanna?
Yes, it is scheduled for August 27th to the 30th, Thursday evening to Sunday. And during that time, if you look at the website, Yoga Therapy OM, www.yogatherapy-om.com, it basically gives you the course syllabus. And this course is for people who are already registered yoga teachers, who want to take their understanding or their yoga knowledge to the next level and move in the direction as a yoga therapist. So for the 4 days, we'll be training these particular registered yoga teachers, and after that, we will be working with subjects who have various disorders. That's what basically we'd like to, I've got a number of people that would like to come, but I also want to put it out to your listening public, anybody who has a chronic or imbalance, who'd like to be a subject, we welcome them. And they can go onto my website and register on the website for the course. I mean, to be a subject for the study.
Can I add something, Susanna?
Absolutely.
Okay. Two elements. That Thursday evening to Sunday is the what I call our classroom and practice session. Whereas the real learning after that comes when we work with patients, right? Susanna, we are following up for a few days and we are working with each individual patient, and that's where you said we are happy to treat anybody who wants and are welcome to come, right?
Yes.
And what are the dates?
Well, starting from the 31st, Monday, to the 12th. So we've got a good almost, you know, a week and a half, a little bit more than a week and a half. And then Rajan will not be here, and then we will continue on with those subjects for a full 8 weeks. Because
yeah,
it takes about 8 weeks to really register a change, I believe.
Yes.
Right? You can talk about that.
Yes. And anybody who is planning to attend the course should realize that they should, without working with the patients, they will not be able to get enough experience to be able to do this on an ongoing basis. So that part of those 10 to 12 days where we are working with patients is also a very critical element that people should plan to attend. Now, the other thing I wanted to mention is, besides yoga teacher Susanna, the people who are in the medical professions like nurses and physicians, they should also be welcome to come, right?
Yes, they it'd be very interesting to them, but they will not have the deep knowledge of the yoga practices if they're just, you know, medical professional. I think it'll be more informational for them. It does take a degree of experience as a yoga teacher and someone who's worked with people and using yoga practices to be able to actually do the work. Unless you have, unless you're teaching us everything in 4 days.
Our idea is, you see, from a life in yoga approach, we have developed a system of exercises which we call as gentle yoga. So obviously, that gentle yoga element is going to be covered as part of those 3.5-day program. However, the gentle yoga is by no means a complete overview of everything about yoga that Susanna is talking about that usually comes with a rigorous teacher training in yoga. However, with the gentle yoga as the tool to, as the therapeutic tool to apply, and the electrophotonic imaging as the measurement tool to apply, people who come from a medical background and who can relate to it, and who have at least been practitioners of yoga for a while, these people would probably be able to appreciate it, and they would probably be welcome to join too, right?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. In fact, one of the people taking the course is a medical doctor.
Okay.
I'm going to direct this question to you, Susanna. If somebody has never practiced yoga and wants to get started and wants to, you know, come to you to maybe learn how to do so or take a session, how would they go about that?
Same thing. If they would like, they contact me through www.yogatherapy-om.com, the contact us page. And it tells you right there, you know, whatever, you know, click here if you want this and whatever comments. And then I respond. I call them up. We talk on the phone probably half an hour. I get an idea of what their issue is. We set up an appointment. And then they come and I work with them wherever they're at. This morning I worked with a woman who had broken her thumb and she couldn't move it. And we were able to, in 1 hour, get her to move her thumb and be able to put her weight on her hands. So it depends on, you know, it doesn't matter who you are. There's always somebody who will benefit, and you start with wherever that person is. If they can't get on the floor, they sit in a chair. You know, and then eventually I teach them how to get down on the floor because I think it's very important that they know how to get up off the floor. That is very, very key, very important to be able to get yourself off the floor. And that's one of the things I do teach. So that's the way to start. Just contact me through my website. There's many different ways to contact me. You can click on the scrolling bar. We have it on the top of the website. You've got the contact us page that will, you know, that I get it on my phone. So I see immediately who, you know, plus my assistant, my husband, he's always, you know, making sure that I know that somebody's called me so that I can call them back and make an appointment.
One of the things that I did want to ask you guys, both of you guys work in the yoga field immensely. Where do you both feel yoga is headed? I know that, you know, it's starting to become more of a recognized practice, especially in the medical field, but where do you guys see the future of yoga going?
Susanna?
Okay, I'll start. I'll let you take over. The yoga the Yoga Therapy Initiative, the 2020, basically is over the next 5 years, where we would like to see it go is that the yoga teachers that are being trained according to alignment and cueing properly and understanding the Yoga Sutras and understanding how to apply these yoga postures to imbalances, just to get a basic foundation, the purpose of which is to eventually become certified. And there is the first certifying body established. Up until now, we've had Yoga Alliance has been a registry. It registered how many hours a person took of classes from a registered yoga school, from that Yoga Alliance approved as a yoga school. But we've taken it, or Rajan has actually taken it further, and brought it to an international level where he's organized all the top research organizations in the world to come together and agree what are the standards that should be taught in a yoga teacher training or a yoga instructor training or yoga therapy training. And that's where we'd like to see it go, so that it's standardized and it's medically proven and it's accessible and recognized. So, Rajan, what you can talk about the Council for Yoga Accreditation International.
Okay. I have a little bit of a much more bigger view of yoga. In December 2014, the United Nations declared the International Day of Yoga. And something very unusual happened. When any such resolution is brought onto the floor of the United States or is proposed for that, at least 10 countries are required to support that resolution to bring it onto that floor. And then, of course, if majority of the countries agree to that, then it gets voted in and accepted. Very interestingly, it was the government of India that proposed this. And they asked all the other countries who would like to support. And they were completely embarrassed to find 177 countries out of the 193 countries in the United Nations wanted to support this. So the United Nations said there is no need for a floor vote. We have more than a majority that supports it. Now, this thing, a part about this acceptance in the United Nations of this in this kind of fashion, essentially establishes the idea that yoga is something that is universal for everyone and is something that deeply affects the mind-body health of people. Once it affects the mind-body health, what will happen is you have less people who are sick out there mentally and physically, means there should be less violence in society. So yoga, I see as something that will transform the whole world. And from the perspective of physical and mental health, but then what it is very few people understand. Yoga in itself is a philosophy of existence. And based on the philosophy of existence, how from creation and, you know, God, if you're coming down to all of who we are and how everything functions, it's all one integrated system. And the higher level of yoga, where you connect into the cosmic intellect and your intuition blossoms, is where it transforms a person as well as it transforms all of creation. And while right now, you know, this kind of a language is too fuzzy for the world, and we want to be scientific, that is why we are focused on the medical application. But once this has been crossed, my view is that we will also get into the economic implications of yoga. Yoga has real implication on economic policy of a country, and this is going to be mind-boggling and shocking for people who hear this, but that probably has to wait for another 5 or 10 or 20 years before we are ready to talk about that. But I think of yoga as transforming all of existence, all of the world. And the steps in this transformation process, some of which Susanna described, is the initial impact of yoga going back 40 years or so resulted in a number of people, some degree of mystic language, mysticism, and then some people who wanted to be scientific went out to do research, and this was like 1% of the people who were impressed by yoga. And so over the last 40 years, a lot of research has happened into it, so yoga works, and this has been established. However, the dimensions of how it is working, this is what this measured yoga therapy course and this unified system of medicine concept is all about. So what will happen is, once that falls into place, and of course, the step that Susanna described about going from registration to standardization and certification, and this is essentially coming with a worldwide standardization exam where anybody who is certified, if you are going to be a lawyer and you're going to, you'll need to pass the bar exam. If you have to be a physician, you have to pass your, to get your license, you need to pass the medical board exams. So similarly, in yoga, this exam has already been put into place. It'll be offered first time February 21st of next year. And so this will be one stepping stone. And the next stone, next element after that is changing the medical school curriculum. Well, you know, today, you know, very few people realize, even though medicine has advanced a lot, no doctor knows how to give life to a patient who is, whose life is gone. And yet they can have the heart-lung machine, can have all that pumping. And as they say, the brain is dead, but life doesn't come back. So the key element is that what is exactly life? We know how to treat the biochemical aspect of the body. And today we know that if you can change the mind, the biochemical also changes. This is what the gene transcription is all about. And so what we need to do is we need to upgrade we need to change the medical school curriculum. And my expectation is that will happen within the next 10 years or so. Already, the most updated medical textbooks have usually a chapter on yoga. And major hospitals and major health centers all over the place have a yoga included in their practice. But changing the medical school curriculum to a degree where you have one common medical understanding based upon which you have the modern medical system, you have the Chinese medical system, the Ayurveda medical system, or whatever all the traditional, they all need to fit within one concept of understanding. So I think the medical school's curriculum and medical understanding will change in a big way in the next 10 to 20 years, and perhaps in the next 50 years, all of humanity will change, and that is really what the International Day of Yoga coming from the United Nations has implications for, and that's what I see the direction of the change.
I just want to add this one thing. This Saturday, I was invited by Wayne State Medical School students to come and present the measured yoga therapy. So it's already beginning. I know that some universities already have, you know, Ayurveda in their coursework, And now this is just an opening. So this coming Saturday at Wayne State Medical School, I'll be doing 4 hours worth of demonstration of the measured yoga therapy with the med students. So that should be very interesting. I hope some of them are listening to the show.
We are getting down to the last few minutes of our program. So what I would like both of you guys to do, is there any final thoughts or maybe something that we did not cover that you would like our listeners to know about? And can you please give out your guys' contact information as well?
Susanna?
Well, I just want to repeat that we are, you know, we'd like to have people who are interested. Again, Rajan said physicians who are familiar with yoga, so it's not completely foreign to them coming to the course. Registered yoga teachers who've been teaching, who understand, maybe not necessarily new to teaching yoga, but have been, been practicing and teaching for maybe 5-10 years to come. And then anybody who's interested in finding out more about their own particular imbalances to sign up for the measured yoga therapy, being a subject, going online to my website and giving us some information who they are, and we'll contact them and arrange for them to come and be a part of the study.
Go ahead.
I was going to say my contact information. I've got my phone number 248-507-4008, or the website is www.yogatherapy-om.com.
Okay, so speaking for Life in Yoga Institute, and Susanna is the regional director of Life in Yoga Institute based in Michigan. Life in Yoga Institute is a nonprofit organization, tax-exempt nonprofit, 501c3. And this institute is the first ever yoga institute that was given accreditation to give continuing medical education credits to physicians. And this happened last year. But prior to that, we used to conduct medical courses for doctors, teaching them yoga since 2010. And the credits used to come from Howard University College of Medicine. Now, that tells you a lot about, you know, our scientific focus. But yet, you know, when we are linking things and we are in the gray area, we'll say it, because we rather like to approach everything from a scientific perspective. Now, my contact phone, I'm based out of Maryland in the suburb of Washington, D.C. So my phone number is 301-526-8308. Again, 301-526-8308. And our website, Life in Yoga, is www.lifeinyoga, all as one word, 10 alphabets, .org. It is not a com, it is .org. And you can see over there, and you can connect with me. You can send an email to that too, or give me a call. Or another way to reach me is simply, Narayanan is my last name, Narayanan at lifeinyoga.org. So Narayanan at lifeinyoga.org will come to me straight. So anything else?
Brittany? Suzanne, do you have anything to add?
No, I think we've covered pretty much everything. I'm impressed with everything that Rajan said, because every time I hear him speak about it, I just learn more and more and more. I went to the course in measured yoga therapy. I mean, in Washington, the first or the second course, I guess, in 2010 or 11, and with my sister Karen. And that's when I knew that this is the direction I wanted to go, because I, being a scientist and my background is exercise physiology, that's the direction I wanted to go in. And I was so happy that I met Rajan and that we're working together doing this.
Well, awesome. I want to thank both of you guys for joining me today and definitely painting a wonderful picture on yoga and measured yoga therapy. I wish both of you all the best in the future, and I'm sure that we will hear more about the electrophotonic imaging and what you guys are doing. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you.
Namaste.
Awesome. If you guys have been listening, you're listening live with In Touch Interviews. I just had the wonderful opportunity to talk to Dr. Rajan Narayanan and Susanna Ran. Both of them work highly in the yoga therapy community and so forth and so on. I want to highly recommend you guys go to bodymindspiritradio.com. If you go under the you will have the opportunity to also listen to the In Touch interview that I had in the past with Susanna Ran, where she talked about International Yoga Day and the 2020 Yoga Initiative. Both interviews kind of collaborate together, so definitely take a listen to that one. I also highly recommend that if you would like more information on both of them, definitely go on there and click under In Touch interviews, and all of their information and a little bit of their background is. I want to thank both of them for being part of the show today and allowing me to interview them. And I want to wish everyone a wonderful rest of the day. Happy August. And until next time, thank you. Bye-bye.